controversy over the wave of immigrants coming here from Central America, mostly families and children fleeing violence there, continues to heat up. Though the tide is turning, with a growing number of community members speaking out in support of the immigrants. Last week, anti-immigration protesters blocked a busload of immigrants in Murrieta, some shouting racial slurs. The protesters forced officials to take migrants to San Ysidro instead. And then on July 2nd, at a community meeting in Murrieta, over 1,000 people turned out. Inside, the speakers railed against the government for announcing that more immigrants would be brought to Murrieta to ease crowding in Texas facilities.
Is an invasion. Why is the National Guard not out there stopping them from coming in?
Not welcome in Murrieta. Not welcome our community.
But outside, a much larger crowd turned out in support of the immigrants.
They didn't let us speak in there.
At a subsequent rally in Murrieta, officials arrested 5 protesters for being disruptive. But elsewhere in California, the immigrants have received a far warmer welcome. In El Centro, San Diego Congressman Juan Vargas met personally with immigrant children sent there, bringing a Bible and praying with migrant families. Congressman Vargas talked with East County Magazine news partner 10 News afterwards.
These are kids. A lot of them are 9, 10, 6, 5. You know, one of them was a 1-year-old. I mean, these kids, interesting, they seem to be more afraid of the angry mob in Murrieta than the murderers down in Honduras. There's something wrong here.
The congressman said U.S. Border Patrol agents are treating the children with compassion locally, some bringing diapers and toys for the youngsters. In San Diego, meanwhile, a coalition of groups that includes border angels and local churches has banded together to help the migrant families arriving in our country. Here is what Enrique Morones, founder of the Border Angels, had to say at a rally supporting the immigrants late last week.
I don't know if you know it, but we're planning to have a forum. With your permission, I'm actually talking to people at USD on this issue in the next 10 days or so. One of the things that's very important is President Obama said this is a humanitarian crisis. It is, and it deserves humanitarian response. Saying send them back is not humanitarian. These kids will die. These family members will die. One of the things that we would like to consider, and we're going to be talking to our elected officials and the consulates, is having the United States have a stronger presence with NGOs and the embassies in these countries. So if I'm in threat of dying, I can go to that embassy in Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, and tell them my case and hopefully get a visa. So I don't have to take that 1,000-mile journey up north. So that's one of the things that we're looking at. These children will be held for 72 hours if they're from Central America. That was a law that was passed under the Bush administration. And then they're going to be looking for a family member so they can send them to that family member here in the U.S. or this is where you all come in, or a place where they can stay. I know that the Max Charter School has said, hey, listen, we got a big place. We would like them to stay. I know a lot of the churches have said, hey, you know, they can stay with us. So we're sorting out those details, and we're working with the authorities. I spoke with Border Patrol Chief Paul Beeson yesterday, and he said it's great that you're collecting things, that you're collecting clothes and food and water, because they're going to be needing this. So we're doing a call out, and we're also telling them, call us. We'll go pick up those people. We want to welcome these people with love, and we want to stand on the side of love.
He then introduced a local religious leader who called for compassion for the children and their families.
Standing on the side of love are our Unitarian friends. I'm going to ask Reverend Dr. Beth Johnson to say a few words. And she's from Palomar Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Reverend?
Thank you so much. Again, I'm Beth Johnson. I'm also on the board of URISE, Unitarian Universalist Refugee and Immigrant Services and Education, and the president of the board of Interfaith Center for Worker Justice. Human beings have within each of us the capacity for great empathy and compassion, and the capacity for fear, separateness, and hate. Our religious traditions all teach us to nurture love, to nurture compassion, to open ourselves to God's message of each and every person being created in the image of a loving God, a God of justice and a God of compassion. When we treat children as objects of disdain and level hatred, abuse, and assault on them, we are committing acts against the holy. Each and every person is holy. Each and every person has inherent worth and dignity.
She denounced the hatred that has been shown by some toward the children, and then she said,
if we are able to see the humanity in one another, we will then be able to respond with kindness, with compassion, with reason. All of the traditions ask that we treat others as we would want to be treated. If we are afraid or lonely or lost, what would we want people to do to us and our children? These children are all of our children. We are not separate. We are all their mothers and fathers, siblings, aunts and uncles. We are all caught in an inescapable garment of destiny, as Dr. King said. What happens to one happens to all. So let us be the people. Let us be the people that reach out in love and that stand on the side of love and act in accordance with what all of our faith and humanist traditions call us to treat others with dignity and respect. Thank you.
Thank you.
East County Magazine reporter Nadine Abbott was at that rally on July 1st, where she spoke with Professor Everard Mead, director of the Transborder Institute at the University of San Diego. He provided the history and the backdrop behind what has led to this influx in immigrant children and their families.
So, Professor, the conditions in Central America that we're seeing that are becoming a crisis actually have become a crisis.
Yes.
Can they be tied to several events, Iran-Contra and CAFTA?
Yes, but I would say that it's even bigger. You know, you could tie them to, there's a very clear connection between U.S. intervention in the region generally during the second half of the Cold War. So it's bigger than any one particular policy. So the U.S. supported military dictatorships in all three of the countries that are sending the kids. And it's important to note, too, it's just those three countries, right? Kids aren't coming from Nicaragua or Panama or even Caribbean countries, right? These kids are coming Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, right? Places where the U.S. had a very intensive intervention, particularly in the 1980s, but it actually began before that. Okay, so if you take the next step forward then, what happens? Well, during the height of the crisis, we also denied refugee status to people from those countries. So a huge portion of the Central American population in the United States are people who asked for refugee status during the wars and didn't get it. Some stayed as undocumented, some were deported, and others over the course of the 1990s got temporary protected status, which is a kind of non-deportation, but that's it. It doesn't necessarily give work authorization. It's very tenuous, right? So they that was extended a couple of times during the 1990s, but we largely forgot Central America. Our foreign policy just disappeared on Central America for most of the 1990s. And what happened, what filled that void, was really acute social conditions. Things got worse. Poverty and inequality got worse. The murder rate actually got worse than during the height of the civil wars. Kidnapping, organized crime, things that hadn't really had a presence in Central America got worse. The drug trade moved to Central America. It's gotten a lot more intense as the Mexican drug war has kind of moved south. But yeah, so these are all things where there's a piece of an American policy question. And then after 2011, and more recently, I think it's really important to note, because people aren't talking about this, the U.S. has been deeply involved in migration policy throughout the region. And we've helped to fund and train border enforcement throughout the region. And it obviously hasn't worked. In fact, a lot of the worst human rights violations that are committed against kids on the journey through Central America and through Mexico to get here, many of them are either committed by law enforcement in those countries or by people operating with their tacit support or who've paid them off. So solutions that focus just on enforcement throughout the region aren't likely to work. Why? Because we've been doing them for 10 years and really for more than a generation and they haven't worked. So yeah, and then CAFTA, the free trade part, is another piece of it. That's part of the bigger world economy situation in which Central America has a very particular relationship with the United States. But I would say even more important than that, it's the legacy of migration and the importance of remittances to the Central American economies. It averages somewhere between 17 and 20% of the economy of all those countries are remittances sent back from the U.S. In other words, the relationships between these countries are not something that can be changed with the stroke of a pen in immigration law, either a really permissive immigration law or a really restrictive one. This relationship and the fact that people are going to move back and forth as part of it, it's here to stay. And it's here until there's a major socioeconomic readjustment in Central America. So the question that we've got is, do we want to deal with this kind of crisis to crisis on an ad hoc basis, or do we want to deal with this in some kind of orderly, principled, and humanitarian fashion where we think about the long term?
Another question, and this has to do specifically with Guatemala, because I'm familiar with that. We also have problems with native communities like the Maya that were targeted during the Luis Mott administration and before.
Right.
And have led to a lot of basically fleeing for their lives for ethnic reasons and genocide.
Yes, no, it's very true. That population, and that population hasn't gotten a lot of attention. There have been a couple of stories about it recently. And it's difficult because in their claims, when they've been interviewed, for example, by the UN High Commission for Refugees, Guatemala, about half of the kids coming from Guatemala are indigenous. Those kids, and what they've told so far in interviews, they're fleeing abysmal poverty as much as, you know, gang violence and things we hear more from urban Central America. So that doesn't mean that they're not facing violence, because the reason that those communities are in extreme poverty, the reason that they've been abandoned, the reason that a lot of them don't have parents or guardians with them goes back to, yes, the Rios Montt administration, the genocide in Guatemala, and the whole set of social issues around land tenure in indigenous Central America. So yeah, it's a bigger question, but it's not, again, it's not as simply a one-to-one. It's not, you know, one intervention or one decision that was made. It's a whole matrix of them over a long period of time.
While some maintain protests against the Central American migrants, voicing concerns over how America can absorb so many newcomers, support for the young immigrants continues to grow. On Sunday, July 6th, 10 members of the San Diego Symphony and the Baja Orchestra performed a concert at Friendship Park in San Ysidro to show love for the children. Donations from diapers to clothing are pouring into the Border Angels office, where Morones says that next up, he will be launching a teddy bear drive to help the frightened children. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.